I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3902 and recognize Representative Doyle to talk to us about some amendments I think he has for the bill.
Great. Thank you, Chairman. There are a couple of amendments. Just as a reminder, we met last week, and I presented the concept of having a bill that would be set up so that local entities would be required when they go out for a vote to the, or go out to the voters to vote on a bond, that they are more specific in their requests for the specific project. And then once the projects are completed, they then have the obligation to return whatever excess money is left over, have that returned back to the taxpayers in a way of paying down the bond debt. And there was also another issue at the time that talked about a way to limit the contingency reserve that these entities are allowed to tack on to these requests, so that it avoids, you know, having the a huge excess of money that could be used for other projects not specifically listed in the bond. Through that discussion, we had several different recommendations made that I went back to LC and came up with the following amendments that you'll see in your dash one amendments there. First thing you'll see is that the contingency reserve provision has been eliminated, so that the idea being that if there is any excess money that's to be returned, frankly, it really doesn't matter how much the reserve is, that if it's not being spent, that it does have to go back to pay down the bond. So there wasn't any need to have that provision. That also recognized Representative Johnson's concerns that there are some issues that these entities may just not have an idea of what the amount's going to be, and that they do need sometimes to go beyond 15%. Second thing that we actually had heard from legislative counsel is that the original bill did not cover it only covered counties and their bonding authority. It didn't cover cities, nor did it cover other districts, like school districts or special districts. And we made that correction. The next correction we made was that you'll see on, or well, the other correction we made was that there is a, let's see where it is. There was a concern by Representative Crummell that if there is a, the term was requiring a clear and unambiguous statement of the specific projects for these bonds. And he was concerned that by making the statement clear and unambiguous, that that would lend itself to some extra litigation on what's really clear and what's really unambiguous. And legislative counsel agreed with me and, or agreed with that, and decided it was best just to delete the term clear and unambiguous, so that now it's just a statement. And you'll see that in the various provisions on page 2 and page 3. So with all that, in essence, we have retained the main goal of this bill, which is to be sure that these entities are going to be identifying specific projects when they set up their bonds, and then once the projects are completed, they are returning the money back to the taxpayer in the form of a paying down the debt on the bond. And to clarify, too, Representative Crummell had a concern that there might be an issue with prepayment penalties in these bonds. I did talk to the Treasurer's office, and they had indicated that the way this language is set up right now is that that is not a concern to them, because the language only states that the bond proceeds or the payment must go back to bond proceeds. It doesn't give a time frame that, you know, would then make any kind of problem for these entities to have to prepay, that instead they would be able to wait for that prepayment time period to expire, and then they could pay it down at that point. Happy to answer any questions.
Question. Representative Carlson?
Thank you. Dan, we had a conversation earlier, but I just wanted to get this on the record. One of my concerns was that if there are dollars left over it still would be possible under this bill, from your understanding of it, for the statement to say any remaining dollars could be used for athletic equipment or improving of ball fields or purchasing textbooks, as long as there was some specified purpose and it wasn't just open-ended? Is that your reading of how the bill could work?
It is, the bill says that it must be a statement of the specific projects and expenditures. And what I would envision in that kind of scenario is that the entity would have to identify, you know, that kind of provision as a specific project. So in the case that you suggested, you know, I see that as a possibility, just as a school district, for instance, if they have a concern that they would they want to use some excess proceeds for purchasing another school site. Mm-hmm. That if that is that specific project, you know, listed on the bond measures, then I don't see why that wouldn't be covered.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, Representative Doyle?
Representative Garrard?
Just to compliment Representative Doyle on the amendments, I think you've covered the holes, and it's a good bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Knopf.
I move the dash one amendment to House Bill 3902.
Representative Knopf moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 3902. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson?
Just a procedural question, and I apologize for coming in a bit late. But if the dash one amendments make substantive changes to this bill, I think it would be fair to be able to hear from some of the folks that have been brought into the bill through the vehicle of the amendment.
Representative, do you have any idea who would have been brought into the bill by the vehicle of the amendments that weren't affected by the bill as it was presented and on which we had a public hearing last Friday?
Are you speaking to Representative Doyle or me?
No, Representative Johnson, I'm asking you.
Absolutely. Certainly, I think folks representing the school interests, OSBA, COSA.
Okay, do you think there's something in the amendments that affects them that is not in the bill?
Well, at this point, we've included, we've gone beyond just the counties, and we're now looking at special districts, and I think special districts perhaps would like the opportunity to be heard on the bill. These amendments bring in a lot of folks who weren't included originally, and I think that in the interest of fairness, they should have an opportunity to at least comment.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I understand that the attorney from the city of Salem and a representative from my school district are in the audience as well, so I'd be interested in hearing.
Okay, we have a motion in front of us right now on the dash one amendments. Is there any other, is there any objection to the dash one amendments?
Yes.
Yeah, until we hear from people.
No, I'll let people give testimony on the bill.
Before we vote?
Before we vote on the bill.
Right.
Yeah, Representative Bates.
A question, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure, I'm just looking at these kind of the first time. Section 5 talks about restrictions to the municipality as far as delineating what needs to be done as far as how the bonds would be spent. Is there some reason that says just the municipality instead of county or other organizations, or is there some reason that was singled out? Mm-hmm. Is that what you want to say? It's page 2 of the dash 1, line 3.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, I might get some help from the committee administrator on this, but my understanding is that the statutes that are identified through in Section 4, that it, then Section 5 goes towards, it is specific for municipalities, and then you look to I think the next section that identifies other entities.
The other sections talk about public bodies. You had to do something specific for municipalities that would happen.
That's correct.
Okay. I'm not trying.
And that's from Legislative Council.
Okay. I'm not trying to put you in the spot.
Oh, no.
The bill says what you want to say.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Okay. Are there any objections to the dash one amendments? Okay. If not, so ordered. What I'd be happy to do before we have a motion on the bill is to allow people to give some testimony on these amendments, the dash one amendments. I don't want to hear about the general provisions in the bill, but specifically the dash one amendments, because of course we had a public hearing on this bill last Friday. And Representative Doyle, if you can stay around, it might be helpful.
Be happy to.
Okay. See, do we have a sign-up sheet? Well, why don't, who's ever interested in providing some testimony in the dash ones, why don't you please come forward? If you can do it in groups, that'd be great. Just kind of pick an opportunity.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good afternoon. John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for an opportunity to respond to the amendments. The bill, as introduced, only affected counties. The amendments broaden that to all municipalities in Oregon with the authority to issue bonds, including cities, counties, school districts, and special districts. I think the issue that Representative Doyle is attempting to get at deals with, frankly, the honesty and integrity of jurisdictions when issuing bonds and the purposes for which those bond proceeds were spent. Let me assure you that the folks that I represent, school boards in Oregon, take that responsibility very seriously. And oftentimes we find ourselves going to voters 1 year for a bond measure and then several years later being forced to go back again. So we want to be assured that the communities involved in the decisions about how that money's spent and that it's spent properly so that we're not tainted and suffer long-term. Many school districts use a lengthy and involved planning process to involve their communities to talk about what the needs are, how the money will be spent, where buildings will be located, what kind of school buildings will be built. We believe that these amendments create a process that's overly restrictive and inhibits our ability to respond to changing local conditions. Let me give you just a couple of examples of our concern. The bill refers to a statement of the specific projects and expenditures. Specific projects and expenditures. In new construction, the bonds are issued, and then there may be negotiations underway regarding the purchase of land. We can't put the particular site of land that we want to purchase in the ballot title, because then obviously the owner of the land would come along, jack up the price, and that would certainly have an impact on those negotiations. School districts don't sit down and negotiate with a contractor until the bond is sold. They'll have an architect, they'll have estimates, but until the bonds are sold, that's when they sit down, go through the bidding process, and see exactly what it's going to cost for a particular construction project. Circumstances may change from the time the ballot title is done, 60 days in advance of the election, until the election is held and that negotiation process begins. A lot can change. Construction costs may go up, they may go down. Interest rates may go up, they may go down. Having those specific projects and expenditures in the ballot title would inhibit that ability for school districts to sit down with contractors and cause them to sharpen their pencils and see how they could get the biggest bang for the buck for those projects. For example, remodeling. A school district issues a bond for the purpose of remodeling the Acme Middle School. They lay out, according to the provisions of this bill, the specific project and the expenditure. Once they get into the remodeling, they may discover asbestos in the ceiling or pipes wrapped in asbestos. All of a sudden, it's going to cost more for that remodeling project than was anticipated. On the contrary, they may get into a circumstance where the remodeling project isn't going to cost as much. So by laying out specifically the projects and expenditures, we think that it inhibits that local flexibility. There are existing avenues for the redress of grievances by taxpayers if they believe that their bond proceeds have been inappropriately spent. They can file a suit, and the 10 taxpayers can file a suit in the tax court, and I can assure you that no school district wants to have that kind of a case go forward, because if they have spent their bond proceeds inappropriately and there's a judgment that the bond sale was somehow invalid, then that, of course, would mean a default, and that would mean that that school district's bond rating would crash, and it could certainly have an impact on the bond ratings of every school district of every school district in the state. I'm unfamiliar with the circumstances that brought this bill forward, but if I could use a metaphor, this appears to be a shotgun when a rifle would be more appropriate. And we would encourage you to reject House Bill 3902 as amended for the reasons I've stated. It inhibits our local flexibility, and we believe it does not serve the public interest. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'd be glad to respond to any questions.
Thank you. Chuck, you want to go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Just in the interest of time, Mr. Chairman, we'll certainly support the comments of Mr. Marshall and the OSBA, as well as comments we hope you'll hear from Salem-Keizer Public Schools, which has had one of the largest bond elections and bond sales and building projects in the state, and the kind of experience that they've had relative to their bond sale and the impact this might have on them. We also oppose this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Or these amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Armstrong here today representing Seattle Northwest Securities. I'd like to echo the comments from my previous panelists here. Our primary concern is that the time frame between development of a ballot title to actual breaking ground can be considerable, and it's entirely conceivable that changes to that project can result as a result of physical conditions of the property or what have you. And we think that the amendments to 3902, the Dash 1 amendments, pose some restrictions there that we have some real concerns about. So I'd echo what my colleagues have said, and we do encourage rejection of 3902 based on the adoption of the Dash 1s.
Good, gentlemen, can you tell us specifically what in the Dash 1s that you're concerned about?
Mr. Chair, for my part, again, Ken Armstrong, one of our concerns is in Section 5, Sub 1, a statement of the specific projects and expenditures that the bond proceeds will be used to fund. I think there could be some, certainly some challenge to how the term specific project is being defined. If it's defined one way for the ballot title, and then as time moves on, that could certainly be challenged if someone feels like it is, like it has been in some way substantively changed, so that in their view it no longer is the specific project that was in the ballot title. So that's a big part of where our concern would lie.
Don't you think the voters, when they are voting on raising their taxes, should have a right to know what specific projects their tax dollars are going to be used for?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, I do. But at the same time, I also believe that administrators need to have a degree of flexibility in managing a project, because there is such a considerable time lag between when that ballot title is developed and when ground is broken that some circumstances may change. And we need to have the flexibility to roll with whatever comes to light.
You don't think then the government entity should be required to spend the dollars on specific projects and expenditures?
Could you ask that a different way, Mr. Chair?
You don't believe that the entity that is asking for the approval of the bond authority should not be required to spend the dollars on specific projects and expenditures, but should have some broader authority?
No, Mr. Chair. I think that they should have they should be required to spend it on specific projects. But the term in this amendment is fairly vague, that it could require them to say in the ballot title, it's this piece of property located at these coordinates, and that's the level of specificity that some people would feel was appropriate under the language.
Where does it say it has to be in the ballot title, Tim?
Well, it doesn't, but it would need to be sufficiently defined in the ballot title, Mr. Chair, to meet the specific project. And I'm just, and then as Mr. Bennett is pointing to me under on page 3, line 16, the order calling an election under this section must set forth a statement of a specific project.
Okay. Other questions? Mr. Barak?
Mr. Marshall.
Welcome back.
I'm having a real rough time with your objections from the standpoint, if you don't have your project to the point where you know how much it's going to cost, how on earth can you go to the people to approve a bond issue?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrard, I think the issue is a ballot title will say we want to build a middle school. Once the bonds are sold and you get an estimate from the architect who's designed the school, you have all that laid out, we know we're going to build a middle school. Once the bonds are approved, that's when you sit down with the construction contractor and start to, and the architect, and start to go through the fine points of exactly what it's going to cost. You have an estimate, but until you actually start construction and break ground, you don't have the specifics. I have some testimony that you'll receive in a little bit is the notice of the bond election that was prepared by Salem-Keizer School District. And in it, it says, if approved, this measure provides funds, et cetera. And there's several bullet points. Acquire land and make site improvements. We believe that under the provisions of the amendments to House Bill 3902, that's not specific enough. You'd have to say which land and specifically which site improvements and their cost.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Before I follow up?
There is nothing wrong with putting a higher amount on your bond issue. This measure is giving you the right to give the money back if you don't use it. But, I mean, when you go in, before you've opened your bids on a construction, if you think it's going to cost you between $17 million and $20 million, use the $20 million figure if you think you can get it by the voters. But this doesn't prevent you from doing that. I mean, you're required to give the money back if you don't spend it. I just can't see any real validity to your objection here.
Well, Representative, I'm not sure that the major concern is giving the money back that we don't spend as much as it is having the statement of the specific projects and expenditures and tying the hands of a school district or any other jurisdiction to specific costs when you have to give notice of the election 60 days in advance of the election. And then depending on market conditions, you may want to sell the bonds immediately after the election. You might want to wait till interest rates drop. So the time frame from actually preparing the ballot title and sending the issue to the voters until you, as was said earlier, you actually break ground, things can change. And the issue, I think, for us is the requirement for the specific projects and expenditures and the extent to which that ties the hands and the flexibility of local jurisdictions to make decisions which are in the best interest of the taxpayer. And finally, I would not encourage a school district, you don't know how much it's going to cost, so round it up to the nearest $10 million, and if you don't need the money, you can send it back. I would prefer that a school district does the best job they can in selling the bond measure to their voters and then being good stewards of the expenditure of those funds and being held accountable for not spending the funds outside the constraints that were stated in the ballot title without the limitations that are proposed by this bill.
Okay, Representative Frummel, then we'll come to Representative Frummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm kind of following up a little bit on Representative Girard. So using the Salem example there, if in a ballot title or in a ballot description, the Salem School District said, with the proceeds of this bond, we plan to build a new high school in West Salem, replace Parrish Middle School at the same or adjacent site, and remodel Bush Elementary School, what you're telling me is a description such as that would not be defensible.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crummell, based on our reading of the amendments proposed, that kind of a description would not lay out the specific projects and expenditures.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Now I'd like to ask a couple of the other questions, and actually Representative Girard did hit on these as well. what you're trying to help us understand is that you wouldn't, a school district doesn't go, a school district or special district or city or whoever doesn't go to the voters with the bond without knowing the approximate site and probably already having an option on the site, without already having an idea of what the building's going to look like, and without having an idea and of what the cost is going to be. of the project.
Representative Crummell, I believe they have an idea of what the costs are going to be. I mean, they've obviously had the planning process. They've talked with the architect. They may have had some preliminary discussions with the contractor. So they have a pretty good idea of the overall cost. I don't believe a school district would submit a bond unless they had that kind of information, because they couldn't sell the bond to their voters by going out and saying, give us $20 million and we'll decide how to spend it later. I think there, and if you, I don't know if you have a copy of the Salem-Keizer's notice of bond election, but it's very similar to what you said. It says construct and furnish a 1,600 student high school in the West Salem area, construct and furnish a 925 student middle school in the Keizer Northeast area. But then it also says construct and furnish elementary schools within the district. Now, maybe they didn't have the land sites available, or there was an option. It says modernize classroom and instructional areas and safety and security improvements in district facilities. We don't believe is specific enough to satisfy the requirements of the bill.
I guess.
So there's some specificity in terms of the overall cost, but until you really get down and let the bids with the contractor after the bonds are sold, then you really don't know exactly what kind of specific cost you're looking at.
Help me understand how the school district then builds their budget for a particular project. How did Salem-Keizer Schools build their budget to build a high school in West Salem? Did they just sort of say, gosh, I think a new high school for 1,600 students probably costs about $30 million, so we'll ask for $30 million?
Representative Crummell, there will be some folks here from Salem-Keizer to which you can pose that question specifically. But again, I believe that there are meetings with the preliminary meetings with the contractor. The architect might have been hired, and they have an overall idea of, they know if they have the land purchased, then they know the kinds of costs that are involved in site preparation. They have an idea of what the school is going to look like. Maybe the design is already done. So there's an overall sort of an outside cost, but until you actually break ground again and sit down and let the final bid, then I don't believe you have the kind of specificity that the bill demands.
Do the school districts or special districts or, let's see, I guess schools and special districts are these represented here, do they build contingencies into their project budgets?
I'm certain they do, sir. Yes.
What kind of a percentage do they build in?
Again, Representative Crummell, that I don't know the answer to that. Maybe some folks that follow me can give you a more specific answer. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you. Putting the expenditures piece aside, I was looking at the original language in the original bill in the statute currently that this replaces, and I use the word use. The use is to which the proceeds of the bonds are to be put. If it said a statement of the specific uses, I mean, I'm looking at how the Salem-Keizer is laid out, would that word perhaps be a better descriptor than the word project?
It might be, Representative Carlson. I think I believe it would depend on the degree of specificity you're requiring way in advance of actual groundbreaking.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Because in my mind, what I'm reading here, like upgrade wiring, modernize classrooms and instructional areas, that's quite specific in my mind as a use. It doesn't necessarily qualify in my mind as a project, but it does look like a use of the money. So I guess the concern would be how specific is specific. Is that your
Representative Carlson? I know the city attorney from Salem is here, and she may well be able to differentiate between uses and projects and help us out on clarifying.
Right. One more follow-up, Mr. The second question I had would be if you had put the word estimated in front of expenditures for a use, would that be more palatable than just simply asking for the expenditures, the specific uses and estimated expenditures?
That's the movement, Representative Carlson, in the right direction.
Okay. I do have one last question. I know I said that for one, my last question. The question I asked Representative Joyle earlier about the balance to be spent on and then having some projects identified or some uses identified there. I've noticed that has been done in the past. Does that work, or were there circumstances where that doesn't work? I'm not as familiar with... What I had asked Representative Doyle is that would it be possible under the construct of this bill that when you went out to vote, after it, say on this list of Salem Kaiser, after it says pay bond issuance costs related thereto, there was another bullet that said any remaining funds would be used to, and then have some general types of uses that it might be used identified in there, and he suggested that that would be possible. Would that take care of some of the concerns that you have?
It certainly would represent possible.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We can have Tina Squire, please. Lori, did you want to skip this one?
Yes, sir.
Why don't you go ahead, Lori?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Lori Wimmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association. And I think this is a situation of unintended consequences for a good idea. And it is the definition and legislative intent of specificity that is most of concern to OEA with respect to the Dash Ones. And with that, I have nothing else to say.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Hasina Squires on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. I've run the Dash One amendments through our bond council, and the only comments that I'd just like to make are, it's my understanding through our bond council that special districts, when they issue debt, if there is remainders of money left over, that they do pay down the debt. They try to pay off the principal. The only concern I have with the Dash One amendment is on page 2, line 7. Not necessarily the word specific projects, but the word expenditures. What does that actually mean? Does that mean if a park and recreation district, for instance, issued a GO bond to build an aquatic center or a pool, that is a specific project, a pool. In my mind, that's a specific project, a pool. And expenditures. Does that mean every expenditure that the Parks and Recreation District will make from that GO bond to do things to construct the pool? What exactly does that mean is the only concern our bond council had with this amendment.
So are you saying you would prefer the words, a statement of the specific projects that the bond proceeds would be used to fund?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that would be more clear to me and our bond.
Getting rid of the words and expenditures.
And expenditures.
Yeah. Maybe when Representative Doyle comes back up, he can comment on that suggestion. Okay. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Yes, sir?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Henry Barrett, and I'm Director of Facilities for Salem-Kaiser School District here in Salem. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3902. I believe you have in front of you a detailed description of my testimony. But we have concerns with provisions of the Dash One amendments which affect municipalities and the authorization to issue bonds. The Salem-Kaiser School District serves more than 35,000 students and is the second largest in the state. We've experienced a very high rate of growth in recent years. And for the last 10 years, our district has grown by more than 700 students per year. And we anticipate that growth to continue into the foreseeable future. You've heard some issues already spoken about, and also with respect to our specific last bond, which was for $177.1 million. This bond is going to be spent over a four-year period, maybe even into the fifth year, with some changes that have occurred in not only the things that we've discovered during the construction of all of these facilities and remodeling, and with the changing enrollment. And one of the things that I heard earlier, which I agree with, is when you start and you go for a bond of this magnitude, you cannot have the specificity of saying that you will build a high school in West Salem and it will cost $43,143,987 until you go through quite a bit of an investigation. And also until the point where you've actually purchased the property, you've actually delved into the site conditions, and you've actually hired an architect and gone into the design and met with the citizens and the community that are going to be the users of this facility. None of that occurs prior to going out and getting the voters to approve the bond. The need for the school was there. We needed a facility for 1,600 students. We went about putting an estimate together based upon our best guesstimate at the time of what it would take in the time frame to build a school. And as you can see, with this Dash One amendments to House Bill 3902, we would have had to do all of this work up front, and it would have doubled probably the cost of the bond, and we would not have been able to get it through. The other issue I have, which is with respect to the amendments, also require the length of time during which the bonds mature. It must be specified. Well, we already do this. However, if the length is locked in, and we believe we would do a disservice to our voters. When we sold our bonds in 1998, we took advantage of an exceptional market condition which reduced the term of the bond from 30 years to 20 years, and we saved approximately $55 million. Based upon enrollment projections, we anticipate that we will need to ask for voter approval of another capital construction bond shortly after we complete the construction of this bond. In all of our conversations with voters, we shared this information. We have concerns about returning bond funds financed at a low rate to voters and then asking them immediately for another bond that would not likely have advantageous rates. The rest of my testimony is in the letter that is before you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
And thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, sir. Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Eric Johansson, and I'm the debt manager of the City of Portland, where I'm responsible for the city's debt portfolio. The total is approximately $2 billion. The city does not support passage of House Bill 3902, specifically with respect to the language requiring identification of, quote, specific projects and expenditures. While we support the public policy concept behind the proposed change, we believe it unnecessarily limits the city's flexibility to respond to changing needs. And I want to cite an example. In 1998, the city requested and received voter approval of a $50 million general obligation bond issue for fire and emergency facilities. The planning, siting, and construction of these facilities will occur over a period of approximately 10 years. While the city has a plan for the location of these facilities, it is possible and probably likely that specific future locations may change in response to population changes, land use siting issues, and emergency response patterns. House Bill 3902's requirement that specific projects need to be identified creates the possibility that the City of Portland and other local governments will have little, if any, ability to modify the use of bond proceeds to respond to these changing capital needs. With respect to the specific projects and expenditures language, I think there's a fix that both meets the public policy goal here and as language is already contained within the statutes, and I cite ORS 250.037 subsection 3, which currently applies to elections for approval of property tax supported general obligation bonds. That language requires that the election ballot title statement contain a, quote, reasonably detailed, simple, and understandable description of the use of proceeds. This change would lend consistency among the statutes while I think maintaining the public policy intent of this bill, and we would support substitution of that language for the specific project and expenditures language currently in the amendment.
I just want to make sure that I understood your testimony. You're speaking to the language on line 7 and line 8 on page 2.
Is there anything?
That's correct, as well as the language on page 3, 17 and 18.
Page 3, pardon me?
Page 3, lines 17 and 18.
Thank you.
I think the proposed change would apply in either case.
Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you say, I didn't quite catch all of what you said, that you would, the language change that you would support. So if you could repeat it again, please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kremel, the specific language is that which is found in ORS 250.037, subsection 3. And it states, quote, a reasonably detailed, simple, and understandable description of the use of proceeds.
Reasonably detailed. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there more testimony before we go to questions?
Go ahead, President. I do want to point out, we have more people who want to testify on this. We've got 7 or 8 other bills up. I'm going to start losing some committee members a little bit after 5. I need a lot of you for work sessions, so we need to try to expedite. Is there any other questions?
No.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Is there anybody else who would like to testify? Yes, please. Quickly, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Bob Cantine with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I just want to let the committee know that we could accept the bill with the amendments as they were written, but we also could support the amendments the City of Portland has suggested. Are probably not bad for continuity through the bond statute.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cantine. Okay, Representative, if you can come forward. Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chair, do you need a motion to suspend it?
I'd like you to get Representative Doyle's feedback on the suggestion.
I thought he said on Tuesday.
We've been wordsmithing up here.
Oh, great.
And wanted to propose some language and see if you would be open to it. There are several places, two places in the amendments and one place where it amends the original bill where it talks about that specific projects and expenditures.
Correct.
So if it said a statement of the specific projects and uses that the bond proceeds will be used to fund and take out the word expenditures entirely, do you want to see that? Or a statement of the specific projects and uses that the bond proceeds will be used to fund.
So what we're doing is on line 7, we would delete the words and expenditures.
Right.
And we replace them with the word and uses.
Right. And that would also be page 3, line 17. And then I think in the original bill, which the dash 1, it takes out a couple words but doesn't change.
Actually, all we're doing, Representative, is replacing the words expenditures with the word uses.
Right, you're right.
That's
the word
change.
Expenditures uses. See, on the original bill, page 2, line 12, because that's still in. It's just the words clear and unambiguous were taken out with the dash 1. So I think those were the only three places that I caught by that language.
Three different places we remove the word expenditure with the word uses.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I would have no problem with that, even as a conceptual amendment. So we can take care of that on the Senate side.
The second.
Go ahead, Representative.
Follow-up. The issue of the length of time during which the bonds mature, you heard the testimony from Salem-Kaiser District that actually they might get a better deal if they found out that things changed. I was noticing on the original bill, page 2, line 15, it says the length of time not to exceed 30 years during which the bond shall mature. Would you be willing to let you grab your bill there? Would that work better?
Well, the language you just mentioned, uh-huh. Representative Carlson, on length of time during which the bonds mature, that was added at the direction of legislative council, and they were looking to make that consistent with other language and other statutes. So I don't.
Well, okay, thank you. If you'll notice, it's not consistent with the bill here.
Right.
This isn't changed.
Yeah, and Representative Carlson, just to note that the comment I got from legislative council was that there are a number of different statutes relating to bonding authority that basically there's just been almost any time there's a need for something different that comes through the legislature as opposed to just dealing with current law. And that's one thing that they have looked to maintain with other statutes, not with this one, because there's been no changes to this particular statute for a while.
But if they had an issue, they could have changed it in the original bill in your amendment, and they didn't. They kept that language the same.
I can't comment on why legislative council did what they did.
I guess, Mr. Chair, my concern is, given the testimony of my school district, that either something that qualifies it so that it's not locked into statute, that the amount of time that the bonds mature is somehow fixed in stone because it was that way in the election. I had suggested that the maximum length of time during which the bonds mature, but then I noticed that the language was actually different on page 2, line 15 of the original bill, and was thinking maybe to parallel that language might make more sense. So either way, I think a qualifier would make it so that you wouldn't run into a circumstance where you couldn't save $55 million because you got a better deal on the bond.
Yeah, on the original bill, it's the length of time not common not to exceed
right,
3 years.
Right, right. So then it...
Mr. Chair, if I can comment, I mean, it seems to me that what legislative council has done with this provision is actually expanded
uh-huh.
that provision where they actually make it, instead of having a 30-year limitation, there is no limitation. So I don't know why that would be an issue.
So is it your impression that it doesn't actually restrict, that they could make it shorter, or they just can't exceed, or?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, if they have that flexibility now,
uh-huh.
with a limitation that says not to exceed 30 years, then they have the same flexibility under the changes that LC has proposed.
Okay. So is this Harrison's?
Yes.
Yeah, Harrison, did you draft this?
We just thought you'd been drafting it.
Harrison Connolly, Deputy Legislative Counsel.
Did you hear that conversation, Harrison?
I heard, obviously, I've been walking for a bit. we were talking about the term, the maximum term over which bonds mature, and I'm wondering, by having thrown out that term maximum, maybe there's some place you want to go. It strikes me, I may be mistaken, but I think the term over which bonds mature is different from calling them early. So some of those comments I heard earlier, I wasn't completely sure I understood to be limited by saying the term over which bonds mature. However, something like the max, and then I think there's also the issue that bonds are issued from time to time up to the maximum amount allowed generally. So it would be 30 days from each issue date or whatever period of years you want to put in there.
Representative Dillon.
How about the issue that you made reference to in terms of, well, I can remember a jurisdiction that in 1980 that issued, I can remember a jurisdiction in 1980 that issued bonds at 13.5%, which is quite an extraordinary rate, and a few years later was able to issue them at about 6.5. Would they be covered? I mean, that's an extreme, but fluctuations that make it that make it possible to save money when interest rates go down for jurisdictions, I don't know if those would be covered.
Representative Witt, Representative Devlin, again, I guess that was the comment I was making, is that I think when a bond is issued, it has a maturity date. That date is probably something like 30 years. I don't believe that calling a bond early changes the fact that it had a maturity date.
Follow-up.
And I think that one can refund bonds, usually under most bonding authority, early to save
money. How would that relate to, you know, these specific statements in terms of the ballot? And you're stating the specific period under which the bond is going to mature. And maybe when you actually have to refund the bond, reissue, instead of it being 30 years, now it's 38 years before, the public is still paying off the bond. They're saving money, but let's say they're paying off the bond over a longer period of time.
Chair Witt, Representative Devlin, I guess that would have been my that would be my concern, I guess, with I came in and I mentioned maybe we're talking about the maximum term over which a bond matures. Generally, because bonds are issued from time to time, each bond issued would have a maximum maturity of, say, 30 years. So, in fact, it's a new bond. When you refund the bond, that's a new bond, which also has an issue date of 30 years. Yes, in fact, that extends the time overall. It doesn't. I mean, it's a new bond, which also has a maturity maximum term. It doesn't really extend the time because you have, in fact, called the other bond early. But the new refunding bond, has its own maturity date.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what I'm trying to reference this to is there seems to be, like, you can call this bill an effort to have like a Truth in General Obligations Bond Act. And if this actual reference to maturity is actually a reference to that, if you tell the voters 30 years or 20 years and they end up actually realizing that the bond has been reissued that they originally agreed to, and that's a normal course of business, have you violated, maybe not legally, but one of the premises for why the bill is put forward?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I think that the situation you're asking about is fairly consistent with existing practice where refunding bonds are used. That is just a matter of course that the refunding bond usually is limited to the same maximum term that the bond it replaces is, but it is from the time that it is issued. So if we were going to do something with that line three, we might want to say the maximum length of time during which bonds, which are issued from time to time. I'm reluctant to do it on the fly, I guess. But
I'm starting to think that it's time already.
Okay, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I would request unanimous consent to suspend the rules for the purposes of conceptually amending House Bill 3902-1.
A conceptual amendment to the bill as amended. We've amended it.
Oh, okay. Well, we've moved the amendments, but we haven't moved the amendments into the bill yet.
Yeah, we moved them into the bill. They're in the bill. We have not voted on the bill as amended.
Okay.
So your motion would be to suspend the rules for the purposes of a conceptual amendment to the bill as amended.
To the bill as amended. All right.
Okay, thank you. Right. Representative Carlson moves to suspend the rules for the purposes of a conceptual amendment to the bill as amended. Is there any objection?
What is it saying?
Pardon me?
What is it saying?
We're changing a word.
Okay.
On three different points.
In three places.
But first we're voting to suspend the rules. Is there any objections to rule suspension? For the purposes of a conceptual amendment to amend the bill, conceptually amend the bill as amended. Any objection? Okay, so ordered. Go ahead, Representative.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I would move that we conceptually amend the bill as amended I'm looking at the amendment here, page 2, line 7, delete the word expenditures and insert the word uses.
Okay. Page 2, line 7 of the dash 1.
Page 3, line 17, also of the dash 1, delete the word expenditures and insert the word uses.
Okay.
And then in the original bill, which is then amended by the dash 1, page 2, line 12, delete the word expenditures and insert the word uses.
Okay. Representative Carlson has moved the conceptual amendment that you just heard to replace the word expenditures with the word uses, and 3 points in the bill is amended. Is there any objection? Okay, so ordered. Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3902 as amended and conceptually amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Carlson moves House Bill 3902 as amended and as conceptually amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Johnson?
I don't know, Mr. Chair, what the protocol is, but I would welcome hearing the response to this amendment from the Salem-Keizer Public Schools. Mr. Brennan's testimony was very persuasive, and I would like to hear his response to this conceptual amendment, if that would be permissible.
It's not. Other discussion? Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the concerns that I had in the original bill have been taken care of with the amendments and the conceptual amendment. I think that in looking at the testimony from the Salem-Keizer schools and the attachment that they have of the notice of bond election, in looking at their summary and in looking at how it is written, I think that this, quite frankly, would be a very defensible, under this new statute, would be a very defensible summary. And I also think that if there was any doubt, then the other thing to do would be to put, you know, somewhere on the summary that says a full explanation is available at, you know, XYZ address. The point being that while this will, I believe, creates a little bit more accountability, at the same time, I don't see this being any more onerous than what state law already is from the standpoint of the bonds being able to go forward. I am really sorry, but spent a lot of time in city government. And I don't ever, of all the projects that we did in the city of Wilsonville, and we did probably well over $300 million worth of projects, I don't ever remember a project going forward to a bond sale without having at least a pretty good indication. We knew what the building was going to look like. We knew pretty much where it was going to be at. We also pretty much knew where we were going to, how much the building was going to cost. We knew what our contingencies were. I'm really sorry, but I think the testimony that we received from the first panel was somewhat disingenuous and was somewhat misguided, because if you don't already know those things, you have absolutely no business as a public entity going out for a bond sale. So I think that the amendments to the bill are good amendments, and I think that this is still, like I said, this is still defensible, and so I will support the bill.
Thank you. Representative Montesander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for not having heard all of the testimony, but being on the school board for 9 years, we passed 3 bonds, and I have experienced the building of 3 different schools, and you do not know what the actual costs are. And I'll cite an example of Damascus Middle School that we had to do a tremendous amount of. Is there a problem?
Representative, he took the 15% out in the Dash 1 amendments. There's no more 15% restriction.
Okay, so explain to me what the 15% does then.
15%, which was in the original bill, specifically said that the amount included as a contingency reserve cannot exceed 15% of the estimated cost. He removed that from the bill.
So in citing the example that I had where it was several hundred thousand dollars just for that, it was actually a $33 million bond, and there were a number of different things that it affected several schools and renovations and repairs and improvements. And I was just citing the one middle school in which there was several hundred thousand dollars difference for that particular middle school. And you can help with clarification if you want.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's all right.
Representative Moore just came into the room.
It's just that there are expenses. For instance, when we had to mitigate some, for another middle school, mitigate wetlands that we didn't know were actual wetlands. And it costs a lot more. And that wouldn't be, there's no way we could have projected that.
That's a valid concern. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson and Representative Groig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually was I appreciated the testimony that was brought forward today, and I think the concerns are valid. And we had some concerns after the public hearing on Friday, which is why Representative Doyle brought back these amendments. And he and I had a conversation earlier today where I expressed my concern about the word projects, which, surprised because I've been saying that for the last little while. So I think this amendment where we put end uses helps mitigate that, but each thing that's listed here, and I agree with Representative Crummell in this example we have in the Salem-Keizer District, is a project or it's a use, and so that would be encompassed within the language. By taking out the expenditures, which we just did, we amended that out, they don't have to list at all what the estimated expenditures are. They simply have to list the dollar amount of the bonds that are proposed to be issued, and then the time during which the bonds mature. And I appreciated the testimony from Mr. Conley and the others on the maturity of the bonds. I think, having looked at it, that actually this doesn't do anything different than what current statute does. So I think we're fine with that language as well. So, and then finally, I raised the question, and it is my hope that the language does this, and that is that a project or a use can also include a statement at the end saying any surplus above and beyond what is above can be used and identify more uses, and that would allow then for the districts or the cities or the counties to be able then to target that. I think what Representative Doyle is trying to get at is that it not just become a fund that's available at the end and then people go back and try to figure out what they want to do with it, that it's well thought out at the beginning. And for accountability purposes, I think that is a good public purpose. I just don't want us to get hamstrung in this process by somehow, locking into statute things that are going to interfere with the process rather than help it out. So I think that these amendments do this. If they don't, I will commit to work with all the parties on the Senate side to make sure that our intent is clearly expressed. But as far as I can read, I think that we have not done anything to encumber the process and have, in fact, made it more accountable. I'll be voting to support the bill.
Thank you, Representative Garrard.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to kind of back up what Representative Crummell, his comments. A lot of the folks will remember that we rebuilt 100% of all government offices in Klamath County after the earthquake. And after we got a bond approval, and rebuilt the buildings, we returned $2 million to the people of Klamath County. I think the flexibility issue is one that you can build into your planning process and the budget process, and I don't think any of us want to restrict your flexibility. We simply want accountability, and that's all that we're looking for in this bill. Thank you.
Yeah, if we can quickly, because I'm under a timeline to move a bill before 5 o'clock today. Okay, the request of the speaker. Representative Bates?
I will defer my comments and make it very, very, very quick. I would agree with Representative Girard about the ability to turn money back to the public that this bill is trying to achieve, and obviously it occurred in your case without this bill. And I am concerned that there may be unintended consequences of this bill that we can't foresee. If both parties had sat down and worked out a consensus prior to this bill coming forward, I would have felt fine about it. But there's enough testimony here today that concerns me that we are not going the right direction. I believe local government can make good decisions, and people in the local area can keep those people responsible, turn that money back in without putting more restrictions on bonding. I'm afraid we'll lose some tools that might actually save taxpayers' money in the long run. Even though the intended purpose of this bill is good, I'm concerned about unintended consequences.
Representative Walker, did you want to be recognized?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Because you've denied a citizen the right to respond to a conceptual amendment, I'm voting no on this bill, not only for that reason, but there were other serious questions raised about this bill. But when we start making conceptual amendments and deny people the right to respond to them, that's when the process breaks down, and I don't appreciate that.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to express my disappointment that the folks from Salem Kaiser weren't allowed to respond as well.
Okay. You have made the motion, Representative Wright. Dan, could you please call the roll on the motion?
Representative Bates?
No.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
No.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Canope?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson?
No.
Representative Walker?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye. House Bill
3902 as amended.
3902 as amended and conceptually amended goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Doyle will please carry the bill. Close that work session. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3633. Representative Carlson? Representative Carlson? This bill's up for work session, and what the chair moves is I move that we send this bill to the Rules Committee without recommendation. House Bill 3633. I'm sorry, to the Advancing E-Government Committee. Huh. The chair moves that House Bill 3633 move to the Advancing E-Government Committee without recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, please call the roll.
Representative Bates?
No.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Excuse.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Canope?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson?
No.
Representative Walker?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye. House Bill 3633 has been moved to the Advancing E-Government Committee, and those who are watching on TV that have been worried about us hitting this 5 o'clock deadline, we have hit it. And I close that work session. To open a work session on House Bill 3007, we have an amendment for House Bill 3007. Do we have Representative Merkley here?
Let's wait. We'll get you.
Go call him. I'll go ahead and talk about it.
It's him calling now, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Yeah, stay around. Let him go.
Yeah,
here, you're
here
to 5:30.
There's that one
out
there, right?
Oh,
we got
out
here.
That's a long
way to go.
What was the other
bill
we've done? Oh, that's just it.
Great. We have quiet please in the committee room. We are in work session on House Bill 3007, and there is a should have a new amendment in your packet. It's the -9 amendments. The -9 amendments are a gut and stuff. It removes all of the current language in the bill, the substantive language in the bill, and it substitutes for that about 80% of the language that was in House Bill 2816, which was the bill that banned the use of mercury and also restricted or set up procedures for dealing with mercury waste. So
I don't have
eight,
I don't.
Dash nine.
Dash nines are coming.
Dash nines are the ones you want. Because the dash eights were a mistake or a mistaken communication with LC. What the dash nines do is they remove all of the language, all the substantive language on House Bill 3007, which was the manufacturer dealer bill. It inserts most of the language that was in the mercury bill, House Bill 2816. That bill, you might remember, committee members, we voted on probably a month ago. Went to the House floor. It passed 55-3 on the House floor. It was referred to the Senate. The Senate was referred to the Business Committee. The Business Committee closed without doing anything on the bill. This is an opportunity to revive that bill, get it back on the House floor, pass it again, hopefully, get it over to the Senate, and get it into a committee where we can get a hearing on the bill. Because of the relating clauses, we couldn't get everything in the mercury bill into this bill. We were able to get about 80 or 85% of it. The balance of it we are trying to address through two or three other bills that are active in House committees in the next day or two. So is there any discussion?
I have a question.
Yeah, Representative Walker?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I missed the first part. I was talking with my staff. Do we have anything of the original bill left in the amendments?
No, this is a gut and stuff.
Total gut and stuff?
If you look on page 4 of the dash 9 amendments, this is delete lines 4 through 31 and delete line page 2. This is all new language.
Once
you get below the relating clause. Representative Johnson?
Can you highlight that 85% or more to the point, could you highlight the 15% that didn't make it?
Yeah, and I can see that Representative Merkley is here now as well. But what did not make it is things that could not fit under the relating clause, and it related specifically to the requirement that DAS get mercury switches out of cars, the education requirement that the way mercury would be used in schools. We weren't able to get into this. I have another bill in the Education Committee. I'm trying to put that in tomorrow. The requirement for a DEQ report relative to mercury, I think those were the primary pieces that we were not able to get into this bill, but we were able to get everything else in. I mean, probably 80% of it we were able to get into this bill.
Thank you.
Representative Merkley, would you like to come up briefly and talk about our project here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Representative Jeff Merkley. I salute the work the chair is doing in order to find vehicles appropriate to send this back to the Senate, hopefully for consideration in a committee that is ready to wrestle with this issue.
Okay, any questions for Representative Merkley? And you support these dash 9 amendments, Representative?
Yes, I do.
Representative Cadeau?
Mr. Chair, just for clarification, also Section 27 couldn't make it in there either, and that was my language on immunizations, yeah. And I'm putting that in another bill.
And yeah, we're trying to revive this entire bill piece by piece.
Piece by piece.
Representative Johnson?
Is it too soon to look for a motion?
Well, then, unless there's any other questions. If not, Representative Johnson?
I'd move the dash 9.
Representative Johnson moves the dash 9 amendments to House Bill 3007. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3007 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Johnson moves House Bill 3007 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, if not, please call the roll.
Representative Bates?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Excused.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Canope?
Aye.
Representative Krummel?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye. House Bill 3007 as amended goes to the floor with a due pass. We'll have co-carriers, Representative Merkley and myself. Thank you, Representative. I will close the work session. I just wanted to prove to the committee, you know, we might disagree, and then 5 minutes later we can come together. Is that amazing how that works? That one is very easy to agree on.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to, where do we want to go now?
827.
Where is it? Okay. I'm going to open do I need a public hearing on this?
We've got.
I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 827A. Gentlemen, this is your opportunity.
We will be brief, Chair. I'm Paul Romaine, attorney in Portland representing the Oregon Automobile Dealers Association.
I'm Jim Gardner, appearing today for Hertz Corporation. We would commend to your attention the A4 amendments to Senate Bill 827. At the risk of a bad figure of speech, this is a minor tune-up to the automobile dealers franchise protection.
That was Jim Gardner with that bad
bill, which was embodied in engrossed 826, which this committee unanimously adopted without any objection. Briefly, the A4 amendments provide some additional assurance and protection to the auto dealers, and you'll find the new language on page 4 of the amendments, lines 6 and 7, and then repeated again on page 5, lines 26 through 27. And what they, in essence, do is create an assurance that Hertz, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Ford Motor Company, cannot be used as essentially a conduit for sales of new cars or nearly new cars, which would contravene the spirit of franchise dealer protection law. We would ask that that the bill be amended and sent on to rules for some further consideration and deliberation, and to allow the parties to see if there are any other minor tune-ups that need to be made to the bill.
Well, we're full of funds today, aren't we?
Mr. Chair, I would like to just read into the record that what we have here is the product so far of months of negotiation. The Automobile Dealers Association has agreed to support adopting the Hertz Amendment without necessarily agreeing to support the amendments in the Rules Committee. We don't have time. We just came to our kind of conclusion quickly to try and get this thing going. We still have to go back to our Legislative Committee to get approval. That's why we're asking you to adopt the amendments. We're assuming that most of the stuff will be fine, and then if we need, again, some minor changes, we will make them in the Rules Committee. We would appreciate it to move it to that committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any questions? So, Representative Crumble?
Am I reading this right, that we are gutting 827 and filling in new stuff?
And, Mr. Chair, Representative Crumble, yes, you are. You basically put 827 into 826 and passed that already. So we thank you for that. You did a wonderful job. So now
you're welcome.
Glad we know what we're doing here.
We're using the number 827 to take care of a few additional details that we've been, the negotiations were more protracted than that for 826.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Crumble, you can think of 826A engrossed as the major overhaul.
Oh,
and
no.
And the minor one is the follow-up to that.
God, you're killing me already.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, is there anybody else who wants to get
testimony? Yeah.
Seeing nobody else, I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session. Representative Knope.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A4 amendments to House Bill, Senate Bill, 827.
Representative Knope moves the dash A4 amendment to Senate Bill 827. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Montes.
Yes. I didn't hear if you said there was any objections from anybody. Would there have been any opposition to this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Montes Anderson, nobody that we know of objects to this. We may object to it after we bring it to our own dealers association. That's why you're moving it to the Rules Committee, not to the floor. Right. Thank you.
Okay. Is there, have we adopted the amendment?
No.
Okay. Is there any objection to the motion on the amendment? Order, Representative Knope.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 827 as amended to the Rules Committee.
Okay. Representative Knope moves with the recommendations.
I don't think we need a recommendation.
Okay, without recommendation.
Thank you.
Representative Canope moves Senate Bill 827 to the Rules Committee without recommendation. Any discussion? Patrick, do you want to call the roll?
Representative Bates.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Charles.
Aye.
Representative Devlin.
Excuse.
Representative Garrard.
Aye.
Representative Jones.
Aye.
Representative Canope.
Aye.
Representative Crowe.
Aye.
Representative Willis Henderson.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Chair Whit.
Aye. Okay, House Bill 827, as amended, goes to the Rules Committee without recommendation. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 827. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2288. And Dan is not here. He's getting a bill up to the clerk's office that he had to do by 5. Okay, here it is.
Why didn't you have to be here?
You guys said 4.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 30.
I have to. If we keep moving, we'll be done by 5:30.
We're going to be done?
Yes.
That's your fast deposit?
We are going to be done.
Yeah.
Why don't we stand at ease for about... till come back to order. Committee will come to order.
You want to get out of here, Alan?
I'm going to,
really good food.
I'm reopening the work session on House Bill 2288. Representative Bates.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2288 to Rules Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bates moves House Bill 2288 to the Rules Committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? This is a bill that we've held in committee since, I think, January. We had another bill, House Bill 3277, which we moved out of this committee, I believe, about 2 to 3 months ago. That bill specifically provided for school districts to capture up to 5 years of property taxes on new construction for the purposes of dealing with capital construction needs. That bill passed out of this committee, I think, 8-3. It's in the Revenue Committee. I've talked to the chair of the Revenue Committee. He doesn't have an intention, at least at this point, of moving that bill. I've held on to House Bill 2288 to kind of see what happens with House Bill 3277. And even though I have some strong concerns relative to the effectiveness of this DCs in terms of dealing with school construction needs, in the school districts in Washington County, there is a severe problem relative to new school construction. And I can tell you that in the summer and fall, as I went door to door, I heard from many, many, many constituents who are frustrated that every 2 or 4 years, the Beaverton School District or the Hillsborough School District are going back to them and they are asking for new dollars for school construction. And I think there's a general feeling developing among homeowners that they are constantly paying for these costs where they have lived for 20 and 30 years. And there's a sense that there's somewhat of an injustice here that those who are buying the new homes, moving into the new homes, are not picking up some appropriate share of the burden. Now, I was hopeful that House Bill 3277 would address that. In fact, I think it would have been, again, it wouldn't solve the entire problem, but it would have been a significant piece to the solution to allow districts to use the property taxes on new construction for a period of time to address the needs to build school facilities. If you go around the Beaverton School District specifically, almost every school you go to, you'll find numerous portables, some cases 10 and 15 portables. There's no end to this. The projected needs for new facilities keep escalating up, and we have a situation now that I think we're paying $6.50 per thousand just for the bonding on school facilities. And rightfully, my constituents are very unhappy about this, and there's no end in sight. So I was hopeful that 3277 would solve this problem. It doesn't look like we're going to be successful with that measure this session, so I'm prepared to support House Bill 2288, again, recognizing that it doesn't solve all of the problems, but I think it addresses some concerns that my constituents have. I wanted to move this bill to the floor. I was told I could not do that, so I asked Representative Bates to make the motion to send this bill to the Rules Committee with a due pass. Representative Bates?
Just a few comments. I feel the same way you do about this bill. Now, this is something I've been lobbying hard on in both directions, but I feel this gives a local option. Districts that are growing fast, that they have an option to look at SDCs on a local level. I think it's a wise bill from that point of view. I've been in the position in our area where I have two school districts that are actually declining in population and would not want to do SDCs. They're, most of their population growth is in elderly populations. I have another district that is growing rapidly, and primarily the people moving in have a lot of children. And those people, I believe, should share some of the burden to the rest of the community of building their schools. This option will allow that to happen. People in Eagle Point could go for SDCs. People in Ashland could decline if they so desired. For that reason, I support this bill. I think it's a good bill, and I'm glad to move it forward.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So you are saying that the reason we're not voting for this in this committee is because the Speaker does not want it to go to the floor. Is that what you're saying?
We are voting to move it to rules at the direction of the Speaker. Yeah, the Speaker did not want me to move this bill to the floor.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay, if not, Patrick, please call the roll.
Representative Bates.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Excuse.
Representative Berard.
No.
Representative Young.
Aye.
Representative Jones.
Aye.
Representative Crumble.
Excused.
Representative Willis Anderson.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2288, goes to the Rules Committee with a do-pass recommendation. Thank you. We've closed that work session. We will open a work session on, and this is the last bill tonight we'll be dealing with, committee. House Bill 2235. Do we know where Dan is? Okay.
Dropping bills.
Well, let's see if we can't deal with this on our own here. House Bill 2235, we heard last, Friday. We had some testimony from Mr. Simmons, Grover Simmons, who represents a, the, I mean, PPI or PI, it's a print, it's a private printing group. Actually, it's a consortium of printers, both public and private. And then we had some testimony from, State Printer and from others who were concerned about the bill. I think we have some dash one amendments. No, dash, what were the amendments we had?
Dash seven and dash eight?
Dash eight amendments, I think. Dan, we're on, 2235. Was it the dash eight amendments that we had under consideration?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the committee, we have not adopted it, but it is the only amendment to the 2235A in gross version of the bill that, we've considered and or has been, talked about previously by the committee.
Okay, and what that amendment does is...
Which one? I'm sorry. Which
the dash eight. The dash A8, 2235.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Charles?
Oh, were you gonna continue? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was gonna speak to the dash eights. What they do is they, state that the director shall advertise for bids and award contracts to private entities on at least 60% of the dollar value of all state printing.
Mr. Chair, I can't support the dash eight amendments. I appreciate the policy issues, and I was certainly concerned about the potential for, corrections to supplant the 30 workers, that issue that I heard. And I think that needs to be addressed. I think that's, in essence, a separate issue. But, the idea of imposing a specific percentage when, from year to year, the printing division doesn't know what their total gross receipts are going to be, is one issue that concerned me. And the other is I think that the dollar estimate was flawed because the, proponents presumed that the corrections printing was part of DAS printing, and it's not. We were able to sort that out in the last hearing. So the dollar amounts that they used actually threw those together, and they shouldn't be thrown together. So while I would like to go on record as saying that I really think that somehow we need to get the, Department of Administrative Services in this issue about whether corrections is going to be usurping, you know, private enterprise and to what extent that director has that authority, that part straightened out. I don't think this amendment necessarily does that, and so I won't be supporting the amendment.
Okay. Other discussion, Representative Bates?
I would have to have about the same discussion Representative Carlson has. I would support her in her statements. I feel the same way.
Representative Johnson.
At the risk of redundancy, Representative Carlson has stated this very succinctly and very well. I will be opposed to the eighth as well.
Representative Mona Sanders?
And, from testimony from DAS, it does conflict with existing statute, too. Was that ever clarified? ORS 282.020.
Well, we had, I think, some difference of opinion on that, but I think the focus on this maybe should be on the substance of positions here, not worried so much about the Constitution or the statute. Any other discussion?
Chair,
Representative Knapp?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2235A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Knapp moves House Bill 2235A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion? Okay, please call the roll, Dan.
Representative Bates?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
This is about the dash eight.
No, this is on the bill.
Yep.
This bill came out of the, Advanced E-Government Committee over to us.
And
this is a motion to move the bill to the floor without any changes,
without any changes
in this committee.
Without any.
It just gets rid of the printing situation for us. Right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Aye. I'm still my aye.
Thank you. Representative Brown? Okay. Aye. Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Devlin? Excuse. Representative Girard?
No.
No. Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Knope?
Aye.
Representative Crummel?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson?
No.
Representative Walker?
Excuse me.
Representative Witt?
Aye. House Bill, what's the number?
2235A.
35A goes to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Who's the sponsor of the bill? Goes back to the governor.
It came from Bass.
Bass.
You want Bass to carry it?
Bass will carry it. Representative Hill will carry the bill, I'm sure. Came out of his committee, and we basically just moved it along.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2235, and we will meet Friday. There's a couple bills we have to do some cleanup on, and that's probably going to be our last committee meeting. And thank you for hanging in there.
We're done?